Home. They say it's where the heart is. They also say it's wherever you make it. They don't say. It's where you unload your stuff, get tired halfway through unpacking, use some boxes as furniture, realize your oven mitt's in a box that doubles as a nightstand, don't want to buy a new nightstand, and use a towel as an oven mitt instead. But no matter where you call home, GEICO makes it easy to bundle and save on renters and car insurance. Easier than grabbing a piping hot pan with a towel that's a bit too thin and trying to quickly get it to the counter. Ooh, hot, 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 hot.
Introducing Under Armour's Infinity High Sports Bra. Its ergonomic design is molded to support the natural movement of your body. With cord-out padding, the better breathability eliminates extra bulk without sacrificing support. And quick-dry padding is Under Armour's fastest-drying padding yet. When you're lifting heavy, running fast, and pushing yourself further than ever before, you need a bra that will help you go that extra mile and make you feel your best. Shop the Infinity High Sports Bra now at UA.com.
Welcome back to the Benzinga Cannabis Hour. This is Patrick Lane and
Elliot Lane, the taller and better looking brother.
You know, it's funny. You have to say that every time.
Every time. It's people, more for me. It's more for me than anybody else.
You can't pull the wool over these people's eyes. They see the truth in front of them.
I even look taller than you on Zoom, though.
It's like, only because I slouch in this horrible, horrible office chair that I have not gotten rid of yet.
Yeah, that headset's so heavy, isn't it?
It's
like the king's scepter. It's his headset.
Listen,
welcome. The last cannabis hour of July.
Isn't that insane? Yeah. I feel like July is the slowest month of the year in some respects, and I feel like I've never worked harder in my life.
Yeah, everybody's on vacation, so we call them. They're on the beach. They're like, why are you calling me?
I mean, I would want to talk to us on the beach.
That's true.
I don't know about all these people listening, but ideally that's the case.
Listen, I'd come join on the beach. If you guys want to invite me, that way I don't have to call you.
Right? Well, listen, this is a breath of fresh air for me to have you on here. Jason, I know you're listening right now. Sometimes when you're on here, just the shine off of your white hair is just distracting to me, and I can't focus. So I'm just really glad to be hosting with you.
Yeah, and if you follow our cannabis hours from week to week, you know, last week we had a guest call Patrick and Jason the A-team. I vehemently disagreed. So they had to split us up, Tony and I, and stuck me with Patrick. So
yep, that's
we're back. We're, you know, the brothers are back.
That's right. And listen, it's a cool show today. You know why? Because I feel like right now the industry is in some ways booming, and in some ways we're starting to see some of the wheels come off in some respects for some of these companies that I think we all knew were struggling. So it's sort of that time, right? And I think the folks that we have on the show today are propping up different aspects of the industry. And I'm very excited to hear from their point of view, not only what they're up to, what they're working on, but also just what they're seeing, you know, with their clients, with these companies that they're working with, how business has potentially changed for them. I think it's a really interesting time to be hearing from people in this space.
Yeah. I mean, the partnerships that we're seeing from the companies here alone, in different ways, albeit, but these partnerships are really, really you know, they are what's pushing this industry forward. They're what is the value that these investors are seeing, and that media and, you know, retail investors are going to see them in public companies. So I'm very excited as well. Who is our first guest?
Yes, absolutely. So as we move him over, Len May, the CEO of Endocana, really cool company. And I'll just say a couple of brief words about Len. But this is crazy. He's more than 25 years of cannabis and genomics experience. And that seems, Lynn, you are the OG in the space. You have to be.
Yeah, well, you were talking about shine. So when I started, I actually had a full head of hair, but now I have the shine. So yeah, that's what cannabis will do to you.
God bless you. God bless you.
I'm starting to see it myself, man. I got that gray coming in.
Keep working in cannabis, man.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding, man. Oh, you think you can bank? No, no bank account for you.
Exactly. Yeah.
God bless you. So listen, 25 years of experience. Let me just rattle some of this off because this is cool. Past positions as president of the Cannabis Action Network, board member and lifetime member of California Cannabis Association, and you currently chair the CBDIA Science Board. That's a lot, man. That is a lot. So the experience that you brought to this space and what Endocan is doing, I mean, everybody must want to work with you. Because
exactly.
I feel like...
Yeah, everybody wants to work with us.
So tell me more. Tell us more. What is Endocana doing, man? We have to know. Everybody's waiting.
Everybody wants to work
here
with us, but not everybody knows what we do. That's the issue. Like, oh, it sounds so cool.
Yes.
Because it's hard to imagine that, you know, our DNA can actually control our experience with cannabis. And, you know, and it's, I don't understand why it's hard to imagine, because everything is personalized. We do a lot of things right now, especially given the current climate and all that stuff. You know, we want to have personalized healthcare. We want to have personalized vitamins. Why not personalized cannabis? And that's exactly the reason why we started this whole thing, is to be able to use DNA to provide you a roadmap on how to consume cannabis and your optimal cannabinoid and terpene profile. And the reason why we actually did this is so people can avoid a negative experience with cannabis. Once you're able to avoid a negative experience and you know that there's some potholes along the way, you can have an optimal experience with cannabis. And, you know, cannabis changed so much over the years. I was recently doing a show with a guy, and he was like, yeah, you know, I used to equate, you know, smoking a joint to a bottle of beer. One beer equals one joint. I said, well, not nowadays. Maybe that was back in the 70s.
I don't know if it works that way. Yeah.
You're going to smoke a joint by yourself. I'm not sure about that. So, and then it's not even the consumption of how much you smoke or what you consume. It is what type of cannabis is good, is right for you. So, and that's kind of what we do, is we use DNA to be able to guide you through that optimal cannabinoid experience.
You're personalizing it. You know, you're taking the stigma out individually, one person at a time, but obviously on a mass scale.
Yeah, well, it's taken the stigma out. It's also scientifically based. So my personal belief, and as you rattled off a lot of these things I did and all that, it's great, but I start off as a patient. You know, so I know that cannabis worked for me to take care of my ADD. I was on all kinds of medications, and then cannabis became like my go-to therapeutic. And I know that other people have this need, and people are concerned about what to find that works for them. But at the end of the day, I was also an activist. I was a president of the Cannabis Action Network. I held a rally at Independence Hall in Philadelphia. Like, this is where I'm from. I live in Los Angeles now. But this is the reason why we want to do this. And laws are changing, but I believe it's going to change through science. And the only way that we're going to do this is by taking control of the science, pointing to the science, and actually participating in the research. And it doesn't have to be clinical trials. It can be observational studies that are controlled to show people that these group of people do really well with this type of cannabinoid terpene profile, and these people do not. So once we are able to provide that information, that as we're doing, then brands can do a better job of creating products that are more personalized, as you were saying, Elliot.
So let's dive into that for a second. I find that to be super, super interesting. And I know that there have been trials. I know that there's been research into the cannabis space and the plant in and of itself. But I think, especially since we've started dabbling in psychedelics in that industry specifically, what I'm hearing from a lot of those executives is that they're benefiting from quicker access to data, quicker access to clinical trials and research than what has been true in the cannabis space over the however many years that we've been doing this now. God, it feels like decades, but for you, it really is decades. But when it comes down to it, what kind of data are you looking for in those observational studies in making cannabis more personalized for your clients? And I'd love to get into that and talk more about who those people are. What kind of data do you think is important?
Well, the kind of data that's important is to be able to look at somebody's genetic profile. So you look at certain genes that have a direct or indirect association with your endocannabinoid system. Mm-hmm. Then you look at the other side and you look at the genetics of the plant. You look at the cannabinoid profile and you look at the terpene profile. And you see how the DNA of the plant interacts with the DNA of the human being. And to see any of those symptomatic conditions where people actually consume cannabis for. So it could be for anxiety, for sleep or rest, for inflammation. And to see if those markers, those genetic markers, have been expressed, triggered, turned on, or they have been turned off. So there's different examples of that. Let's say that somebody's consuming cannabis and is experiencing anxiety. Well, there's a gene for that. So what are you consuming? Are you consuming, and I don't like to use indicas and sativas, but you know, for the general audience, a sativa-dominant type of hybrid that is limonene, terpene-dominant, that gives you a serotonin boost, gives you an up. Well, if you have a genetic predisposition towards that anxiety or that feeling of stress, that cultivar ratio formulation may actually trigger that genetic expression. But if you know this about yourself, then you may want to consume, you know, something that has more of a balanced CBD to THC ratio and also a different terpene profile, like linalool as a primary terpene, which actually helps lessen the anxiety it's provoked by THC. And we know this because there are studies. There's over 16,000 studies in PubMed alone on cannabis. We can actually draw on those studies, and every single thing that we say has a peer-reviewed reference associated with that. Mm. Plus, we're participating in studies ourselves. So one of the studies, just to give an example, it has to do with metabolic function. How do you metabolize? If you're a poor metabolizer, you guys know anybody who ever had a negative experience with an edible? I say this whenever I speak. It's like, yes, yes. And not only do you have the 11-oxyhydroxide conversion, your liver conversion, but you could be a poor metabolizer. If you're a poor metabolizer through the digestive system, guess what? You're in for an interesting experience. It's going to be slower onset. It's going to be a much longer onset. And if you know this about yourself, then consume differently. Consume sublingually. But think about it this way. Even if you are a poor metabolizer and you're going to have this intense experience, but you also have genes that are associated with psychotic-like effects. So not only are you having an intense experience, but you also triggered a genetic expression for a psychotic-like effect, and you can hallucinate. Maybe that's a positive thing for some people, but you can have a pretty adverse experience. And what's going to happen? You're going to say, if you're new to cannabis, you're going to say, oh, no, this is not good for me. And you can tell other people within your network that this doesn't work. But just because it didn't work for you or you didn't know what to consume for yourself personally, somebody else may have a completely different experience. So by you having an optimal experience avoiding an adverse event, we're able to use science to be able to get people to remove this ridiculous stigma about this plant.
Which goes into recreational too, right? I mean, you just touched on it, I think, right there, the psychotic aspect of what you're saying. But, you know, I mean, this is going to, I would imagine, shift how people perceive it on a recreational standpoint as well.
Well, absolutely. And we were just talking about this example of, you know, a joint equals a beer kind of thing. Another example, we're working with, and I call him patient, we're not doctors, so I want to make sure I'm very careful to disclaim that. But there's a woman who has MS, multiple sclerosis, and she's consumed cannabis medically through a doctor for 15 years. She consumes whatever, you know, her ratio formulation is, then She was out somewhere. Somebody gave her a vape. She vaped and she had a panic attack. And now, and she emailed us and she goes, when I go back to my original formulation, whatever I consumed before, I have panic attacks. So what happens is these genes stay dormant. And when she consumed something that was a very high, probably THC and a different terpene, it actually turned that gene on. So she had a genetic expression that got turned on. And now what we need to do is see if we can turn that off and see. So a different formulation, and what she came back to us was a beautiful statement. She said, now that I did my endoDNA test and I found my ideal ratio, it allowed me to be me again. And that's all we want to do, is have, give the power back to the people so they can actually have a more, a better experience with their cannabis use for whatever reason, even if they want to do this recreationally or therapeutically. To me, there is no difference between recreational and therapeutic. Anything that's changing your state in any way is an altering state, substance. So to me, it's a therapeutic supplement. And however you consume it is up to you. And some people may need it for a medical condition. Some people may need it to just, hey, I need to unwind instead of a glass of wine. So however you guys quantify that, those are the different things. And Patrick, I didn't forget about your question about the data. The data that we collect, so a study that we're doing now is looking at different people that are participating in the study. What we did find was that 80% of the people that participated in our specific study had a genotype in common that was 0.0004% common in the general population, which is a really interesting way to be able to get research out there and say, hey, maybe it's not, you know, there's liver challenges, all kinds of things that people, that the FDA actually coming up with when it has to do with cannabis, but maybe it's not across the board. Maybe it's just for certain people that have a specific genotype and they may need to have a different type of cannabinoid or a terpene profile. So once you're able to get personalized on the results that we're getting from all the research and anecdotal data that we're getting, now we can start pulling or pushing into more clinical trials. But everything is done under institutional review boards. So it's anonymized and it's done, you know, the right way, the way that you would do an actual trial.
Very smart, very smart. Any way that we can lend credence and legitimacy to the industry, we want to do that. So one other question. I mean, you mentioned the endoDNA test. I want to hear a little bit more about that. I have this, I would imagine you guys have to do so much education, not only to your clients, right, to help them understand why this is important, why we need to make sure that these strains or formulations actually do what they're saying they should be doing. But I have this vision in my head of going into the drugstore or the grocery store and seeing the Dr. Scholl's setup where you stand on the sensor and it tells you exactly what kind of foot insert you need in your shoe, right? So tell us about this endoDNA test, man. What does it look like? How do people get it? What's going on there?
That's exactly how we you go into a pharmacy and you stand on a little device and
wouldn't that be awesome? Wouldn't that be great? Based on the size of the arch in your foot, this is what strain you need.
Yeah, that's the future. Well, we're not there yet. So this is the interim future right now. It's the same way that you would get like a 23andMe or an Ancestry or any of the other DNA tests, except okay. We don't have to fill up a tube with spit for 20 minutes. I don't know, that was difficult for me to do. Ours is a buccal swab. It's basically a Q-tip. It's a kit. You can buy it in a store. You can buy it online at endoDNA.com. It comes to your home. You swab the inside of your mouth. You put it back in the tube. You put it in the box. It's already pre-addressed stamped and you ship it over to our lab. Now, the most important thing is all that is easy, but before you ship it, you have to register. And this is a really, really important part of why you need to do that, because we are HIPAA compliant. We're fully anonymized and people are concerned about their DNA. If you do not register, we will not know that your DNA belongs to you because all the information resides on Amazon's AWS server. It's fully encrypted. And your personal information and your DNA are in two different parts. So when you're the only one that has the decryption code, when you log into your portal, which is HIPAA compliant and anonymized again, all that information belongs to you. I can never see your DNA matching the individual. So it's really important to be able to know that. And the other part that we do and it takes around 4 weeks to get your results. Okay. But the other part is, if you've already taken a 23andMe, if you've already taken an Ancestry, any of the other tests, you own your raw data. And so does Big Pharma, but that's a whole other thing. But you own your raw data, and you can upload your raw data to our portal, and you get your results within 30 seconds. So you don't
have to. Oh, wow. Okay. Very cool.
That's awesome.
And the one other part that I didn't mention is, once you have your results and once you have your formulations, this is your ideal ratio of cannabinoids and terpenes, you can say, okay, I'm gonna go to a dispensary and I'm gonna buy my one-to-one with limonene and beta-caryophyllene. However, we took it a step further. We have a matching algorithm that we look at products that are geofenced using certificates of analysis, where we match those products based on your ideal ratio. So we can tell you that, you know, where you reside, these are products available, and these are a 60, 70, 80, 90% match to what your suggested ratio is. So as we get more information for more product manufacturers and companies, we'll have a much more comprehensive database for them as well.
Very cool. And so where are you in the creation of that database? Is that still
it's active and live now. It's
very cool.
We just keep adding more and more products as manufacturers share their certificates of analysis with us. So everything is active and live. We launched in 2017. We've been in business in this iteration since 2017, so for the last 3 years. And right now, you were talking about the cannabis market. Yes, there's an increase, but also what we've seen, and complete transparency, the first several weeks of COVID, we were like, what the hell is going on? Because no sales, like, what is going on? And I think people were in shock as we were. What happens? What do we do? But what happened over time, as people are at home, and as you were saying, the cannabis industry is increasing, the sales are increasing, more strategic alliances and partnerships are happening. When you're sitting at home, maybe take some time and swab and find out, what is that cannabis that you're gonna have delivered to your home? What's right for me? So it gives you a little bit of time. So that actually is boosting our business somewhat. And then all these companies are starting to come to us, and they wanna research. They wanna see what differentiates their product. How do they know their product actually works? And so we're involved in a bunch of projects like that with different
manufacturers. That's exactly what I wanted to, my last question here, and I think this is the overarching theme of this Cannabis Hour, the partnerships that you have to create for something like this to succeed. Obviously, you have to play within a lot of sectors within this one industry and probably outside this industry as well. And it looks like you are doing that. So in terms of what's been most important to you, what are some partnerships that you can touch on that have helped Indocana succeed so far and probably will going forward as well, I should say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, partnerships are key. And this is the thing in this industry, and we see this all the time, that you have to have an integration of good, solid partners that really want to do the right thing. It's not just about coming in and getting land grab and grab the most and get licenses and all that stuff. It's really coming out with effective products. And the companies that really understand that really are the companies that we partner with. We have partnerships with a company like Medical Marijuana Inc., Canaway. We have partnerships with the NFL Players Congress, which is distributing the settlement for NFL players. And we're actually helping them with finding the right type of cannabinoid profile for them, tinctures, sublinguals, et cetera. There's also partnerships with a few other very large companies that we're doing some interesting research with that I can't talk about just yet, but we will be publishing in the very near future, so you guys will see. But it's the household cannabis brands that everybody knows. I can give a hint. One of them is affiliated with a little girl that passed away recently. That's as much as I can probably say legally. But we have a lot of incredible companies that really want to do the right thing, and this is ideal. When you look at this as, this has been available for us as a therapeutic for thousands of years, and all these laws, and it's incredible to see what happened in the last 25 years. We're not there yet, but we're moving the needle together. But it's moving the needle in the right way, and it's moving the needle with the companies and the individuals that run those companies that really see this as a therapy, as a wellness product. What can you do to differentiate your brand? What can you do to put some science behind that? And any company that's doing this, there's no reason why they shouldn't look at personalizing their solutions. It's everything. And think about it this way. You have genes that you're born with. You're born with all your genes, but there are certain genes you can't change. So like, you know, your height, your eye color, your hair color, you know, male pattern baldness, that's something that you're going to have. Other genes are able to be turned on and off based on lifestyle. And your lifestyle means it's not just cannabis. That's one of them. It means what your nutrition, what are you putting in your body, your mindset, what are you doing in your body? So overall wellness and health, cannabis is a big part of that because it helps to modulate all these other systems, but it's not just that. So understanding everything you can about yourself empowers you. And I think that during this whole, you know, pandemic with COVID, we see that the healthcare system is very easily overwhelmed. We're very good at addressing something when it happens, but what we're not good at is preventing something from happening in the first place. And the more information you have to empower yourself with that information and knowledge, you're able to take action in order to have a more, you know, balanced life. And that's, you know, what cannabis does and everything else.
You said it. You said it, man. That is really cool. Knowledge is power for sure. And it seems that way for the consumer. It seems that way for the companies that probably work with you. So where can people find you? What's the website they should go to for the tests and any of the companies that are listening to potentially partner?
Yeah, it's endodna.com. Endodna.com. Anybody can reach out to me. My email, Len, endodna.com. And we're at endodna on all the other social platforms. So please reach out. If anybody wants to partner, anybody wants to work together, anybody wants to look at studies or doing something together, we're in it to partner with people and companies that really want to do the right thing. And the future is that everything is going to be personalized. You're going to have your food, your vitamins, and everything else is going to be personalized. So as Gretzky said, you skate where the puck is going to be. And that's kind of where we're going.
There you go. There you go, Len.
Next time we have you on, we're going to have DNA tests ourselves.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say.
Maybe we'll have our results.
We'll do that. We'll get you guys codes, and then we'll get your listeners a discount code. I'll get it over to you. Maybe you can share, and anybody that's listening to this, anybody that's watching this, they can get a code, and I'll be happy to come on and review both of your results. It'd be interesting to see if you guys are willing to do this, if there's a difference, and I'll put a piece of the puzzle together for you guys.
Hey,
that would be fun, man.
That would be cool, actually. Yeah. We're going to have to do that, Len. Hey, thanks for being here, man. It is a pleasure.
I really appreciate it.
It's incredible science, man. But be well, stay safe, and we'll definitely talk soon.
Thank you, Len.
Awesome.
Wow, so cool, man.
Yeah.
I would definitely want to take that test.
He broke down something incredibly complicated and made it very understandable. Particularly.
Yes. Science was never my strong suit, so I really enjoyed listening to the partnerships, why he's doing what he's doing, the education that he's got to throw in there for both the companies and the consumer. Really, really cool stuff.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see which cannabinoid is best for my own personal intake.
Yeah, no kidding.
I need to use
that information stat. Cool. Well, let's keep it rolling, shall we?
So next up, we have a wonderful partner to Benzinga, Nadine Petrovsky. I will ask her if that is how we pronounce her last name. But she is the national leader of Crow LLP's Cannabis Industry Practice Group. She's also the office managing partner and partner in charge of the firm's audit practice in Denver, Colorado. So
Denver.
She's a very busy lady.
I can only imagine in that market. Good Lord.
Yeah, she's been doing this for 25 years. Crow is a national leader in this space. You know, there are a few, of course, that come to mind when you think of accounting partners, tax audit partners, etc. But Crow's definitely one of them for me. And I think they have some pretty wonderful relationships within the industry that I want to get in to, especially. Hey, Nadine. Oh man, that background's nice. What a view. It reminds me of Bosch. If anybody's, I think you're on mute. There we go.
I have marketing people. That's above my pay grade. He couldn't do it.
Marketing's above all of our pay grade.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. One of these days, we'll figure it out.
I guess they didn't want to see from the inside of my house. I don't know.
Don't look at me. Nadine, how have you been? How are you?
Oh, I'm doing really well. Colorado's doing great. Actually, I get some really great news this morning reading the news here in Colorado. Cannabis is booming, and May had the record sales for cannabis ever at $192 million.
Wow.
So that's quite impressive considering COVID and everything else that is going on right now. So,
all thanks to Nadine and Crow's efforts.
Yeah, that's it.
They accounted for about 190 million of those sales.
So, congrats to the Colorado industry. That's
incredible. Yeah, that's pretty impressive, though. Yeah.
So, Nadine, what is tax revenue look like in Colorado for a number like that?
I think that the number was right now for the year, I think, is at 167 million in tax revenue.
Wow.
For the year. Wow. So it's an enormous amount of dollars. Personally, I'd like to know where all that tax money goes. It's supposed to be earmarked for certain things. So, you know, that's a little political, but that's a lot of money.
Well, so, and I don't want to dive into the politics too much, but what I will say is that obviously it was a bit of a blow for a lot of folks in the industry, seeing that safe banking wasn't going to be included in the second round of stimulus. Mm-hmm. But we've gone from essential to, I think McConnell said non-germane was the wording of choice there. And being we're from Kentucky, so we get to make fun of him. But when it comes to tax revenue and when it comes to stimulating the economy, you would think 160 something million dollars would be helpful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's going to help legislation as we move forward, because we are seeing deficits, and it's going to increase because of COVID going forward. So hopefully this is going to stimulate perhaps some legislation going forward to ease some of the restrictions on cannabis. I think right now, just for the most part, because of COVID, maybe some of the things that were not allowed, whether it was curbside pickup or whatnot, they're not going to be able to go back in time and restrict that. It's kind of out of the bag right now. It's mainstreaming it even more in states that perhaps weren't able to do those things originally. So I think to some degree, COVID has had a negative impact on some companies if they're in the process of maybe trying to raise some funds. But those that are operating already kind of push the envelope for them to have to do some things differently, which again, I don't think they're going to be able to restrict it and pull it back.
I don't see these markets doing what Ontario just tried to do. So we won't get into that. But so let's get to Crow. Nadine, how long have you been leading the cannabis practice?
I've been leading it since it's been legal in Colorado. So since 2012.
Fantastic. So can you dive in a little bit to Crow's spot in cannabis?
Yeah, absolutely. So Crow, just for people who are not familiar with the firm, we're a public accounting, consulting, and technology firm. We've been in business for a really long time, actually almost 80 years. We have over 40 offices nationally and approximately 4,500 employees. We are a top 10 public accounting firm, and we are actually the only top 10 accounting firm serving the cannabis industry in the United States. You see many of the big four, they're actually operating out of Canada with their affiliates. We were one of the first public accounting firms to serve the industry. When other ones were sitting kind of on the sidelines, we felt we were uniquely qualified to provide services in this space, both from an industry specialization perspective and a risk perspective. Our client acceptance policy is very rigorous, and we've actually turned away more clients than we've accepted over the years, but that's resulted in an extremely successful cannabis practice with many of the key players in cannabis who are our clients today, and a strong brand in the industry. You really don't see a lot of advertisement from Crow or marketing dollars being thrown out into sponsorships, such as just blanket advertising. Of course, we attend Benzinga events because they're great. But things like that is where we want to spend our dollars. And so most of our clients have come from referrals or the meet and greets or the personal ability to get in front of companies, such as like Ben Singh. I'm sad that we're not being able to do some of those events this year. So, but this is a great alternative. But, you know, you can't beat those in-person events and getting to know people.
Yeah. You know, I'm really glad you said that. And I think, you know, for you and a lot of our other friends and partners out there, we are trying to solve that problem. Like, how do you mm-hmm. network virtually in the same way that you would walk up to someone at a live event or meet someone at the bar at a live event, right? So stay tuned. August 18th, we're going to try something out. And again, on October 15th for our next one. But I think we may have at least an interesting solution to that so that more people get to meet one. Right.
That's great to hear. Yeah. And I think people are being creative during this time.
You have to.
Yeah. I mean, virtual is the name of the game. And a lot of people didn't like it at first. Some still don't like it. But a lot of people, the creativity and the evolution of virtual within 4 months has been pretty astounding.
It really has been.
Yeah.
I've attended so many virtual happy hours at this point, too.
That is right. Let's dive into a little bit more into the industry. How are you seeing, I mean, this can be pre-COVID, it can be since, you know, early March or when COVID really hit. Outside of, you know, where you're seeing the sales come from, are there any other evolutions within cannabis that you're seeing?
Well, just in trends in general in cannabis, greater emphasis on technology and data-driven decision-making. You know, digital transformation has been the greatest paradigm shift in almost every single industry to date. And that's no different for the cannabis companies. Companies are building digital processes into their infrastructure and their core infrastructure. You know, you already see inventory tracking. But we are seeing a lot more companies with ERP implementations, regulatory compliance software, product testing, and a lot of data intelligence. So really monitoring their performance, their top-selling bud tenders, their sales trends for their businesses so they can make better decisions. But of course, you know, with that type of, you know, with technology, the advantage is money. So the larger companies are able to have an advantage there in being able to implement that technology and differentiating themselves that way. Another thing that I'm seeing is investment slowdown, and I think everybody has experienced some of that over the last couple of years, especially since 2018, when it seemed that cannabis would quickly become the golden child for business investments. And the market was basically frothing at the expectation, but with investments not really providing returns as expected, you know, we're not seeing as much investment, or, you know, a little bit more leery. And that doesn't mean that capital is impossible to generate, but it does mean that there's going to be a greater level, and that's what we're seeing now, of due diligence that companies are facing. Companies have a greater level of sophistication as it relates to their governance structure, their policies and procedures, financial records. They're going to be looked on more favorably and more likely to attract investors. So you're seeing a more traditional due diligence process out there for investors, asking a lot more from the financial perspective. Another thing that I'm seeing is consolidation, a lot of consolidation right now in the market. And that is a result of greater financial barriers and access to capital. So smaller companies, dispensaries, and cultivation operators are likely going to be bought up by larger companies that have the access to capital right now, that also have, you know, established distribution partners, and also, you know, just a overall greater legislative influence. And many of the larger companies that we work right now, one of their strategies is an acquisition strategy to expand nationally or internationally. So we're seeing a lot of that. And then lastly, but not least, are companies preparing to come to the U.S. markets? I mean, there are a lot of companies right now that have gone abroad to raise capital, such as on the Canadian exchanges. And a lot of them are, you know, they're not as happy as they thought they would be with that process. And so we're seeing a lot of companies looking forward to coming to the U.S. markets when that's allowable and preparing for that.
Very cool. Very cool. I want to jump back to the technology. I think that's super interesting. And I wonder how much of that, in your opinion, in that shift to digital transformation is due to just the compliance that these companies have to deal with in their manufacturing and tracking and tracing of these seeds and materials, and how much of it is financially based. I mean, I come from the life science space, and I mean, it's been there for so long, you know, and the technology, ERP, all those tech stacks have been in operation so long that I wonder what the impetus was in cannabis.
You know, I think a lot of it stems from compliance issues. There's obviously so much more on the compliance side that cannabis companies need to implement, whether it's in Colorado, it's the metric system, seed to sale. But I think that there are, you know, larger companies want to be more sophisticated as it comes to intelligence and just data gathering and understanding their consumers and where their products are being purchased and what types of products are being purchased. And so I think a lot of that is just trying to understand the market. I mean, similar to your last guest, I mean, they're trying to understand, you know, differences on how people react to cannabinoids. So when you're in business, whether you are, especially on the retail side, I mean, you really want to know your customers and what they're purchasing. I actually laugh here. I have a client that has a dispensary here where I live in Thornton, and it's one of the top dispensaries out there that they operate. And I think they operate like 20 some odd of them. So it's so interesting. And I wish that they had some of this data analytics in place, because I'd like to know who's doing all this buying. It's like a soccer mom neighborhood. So maybe it is the soccer moms.
I would imagine it is.
It could be, but it would be really interesting to understand like what the dynamics of the purchasing and why specifically the neighborhood that I live in. It's absolute suburbia here. So it's interesting. So I think a lot of that is just really knowing your consumers.
Out of curiosity, you know, we touched on, I think, some of the benefits of what's happening right now for larger companies. What's happening? What's challenging these larger cannabis operators right now in terms of the tax, you know, and taxes and accounting and legislation? Obviously, there's so many different topics we could probably look at that, you know, we're just touching on compliance, but are you seeing anything specific, you know, as of recent, you know, that maybe is a negative trend?
Well, I think with all of the growth, one of the things that I see a shortage of is a lack of talent in the industry. So people are basically robbing one another for, you know, highly competent people, whether that's on the financial reporting side, whether it's on the compliance side. It's interesting, in Colorado, we see a lot of different people jumping ship to different companies because they're lured away. So as they grow, they really do need top level talent to get to their next phase. So say they're going public, or they're thinking of going public. There's so many, only so many people out there that can really take a company public. So you need people who are savvy with financial reporting and really know the ins and outs of that. You need people who are very savvy on the compliance side and on the regulatory side and on the legislative side. So I think one of the big challenges has been definitely attracting and retaining talented people. That's a big one. I mean, we always get calls, do you know of anybody in the industry, anybody looking? So we always have a back burner of resumes out there too. So
yeah, well, I would imagine with what COVID has done to some of these companies too, it's probably a good time to be looking,
scooping some people up. Yeah, too. And looking, exactly. And tax is always going to be, until 280E is rectified, is always going to be a challenge and continues to be a challenge. And just making sure that people are documenting how they're allocating their costs for 280E purposes is always significant. Our tax people probably work 85% of their time is working on issues related to 280E.
Got it. Well, in the remaining time that we have, in just another minute or two, I'd love to ask you, you know, for those people who are watching, the companies that are on right now, how do they get to work with a firm like you? You know, you guys have a rigorous process for accepting new companies. How do they reach out, whom to, and what should they have prepared when they're ready to have a conversation with you?
Basically, our client acceptance procedures, we generally want to see some financial information. We I mean, it's not that we don't work with larger companies or smaller companies in the industry. Many of our clients are the larger companies, but we do look at smaller companies because there's always that, you just never know. There's always that one that you know is going to hit a home run. Sure. And it's going to need the services of a company such as ours. If they're going to be a small one dispensary, very small shop, we're probably not a good fit for them. So they would probably go to a more local accounting firm. But a company that intends to grow to a certain level, anticipates very complex transactions, acquisitions going forward, is going to have complex accounting that or tax issues, potentially valuation type issues, purchase price accounting. We really can help those companies across the board. We work out of four business units, which are audit, which I'm in, and then tax, consulting, and advisory. So we're helping companies right now who are considering going public in the United States at some point. You know, hopefully regulations will ease up here, 2 to 3 years, cross our fingers. Right. But they're getting ready to do that. A company like ours can help them to do that because we have all the systems in place. We have all the consultants who can help them get on track with their internal controls, with their governance, with their accounting systems, audit readiness. So a company that is really looking to be sophisticated, even if they're not there yet, would be a company that we would be we would ideally like to work with. And so reaching out to me as the head of the practice essentially is usually where it starts, and then I'm able to farm it out to people all over the US who work in the industry that it makes sense for them to, you know, connect with.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we really appreciate you being on, Nadine, and thank you so much for the insights. I think it's always cool to see what's happening, where the industry is going, and how folks like you guys are really threading that needle and keeping everybody afloat right now. So thanks for doing what you do.
It's becoming much more professionalized, and it is really great to see.
Nadine, thank you again for being
on.
Thank you. Giant, everybody. Please do reach out and make sure that you all get to know Nadine. She's a wealth of knowledge. But stay healthy, Nadine, and
tell
the team we say hi.
All right, and looking forward to your programming coming up and seeing you guys in person.
All right, we'll see you soon.
All right.
Thank you.
I love Crow.
Good firm. Good firm.
Good people over there. They have a wealth of knowledge. I mean, we didn't even touch on some of the questions that I wanted to ask her in terms of, you know, financing for how companies prepare for that.
These things always go quick, don't they?
You know, I think what we're seeing today, though, is, you know, destigmatizing it, both on the legislative level and the personal level. But I think one thing we haven't touched on is like the generational gaps. You know, and where to start from young people like myself and old people like you.
How dare you? Shots fired, ladies and gentlemen.
Always.
So on that note, I will introduce our next guest. Thrilled to, actually. And as she's moving over, this is Evelyn LaChapelle. And she joins us in two capacities. And I hope I don't speak out of turn, but I think she is the community engagement manager at Virtosa, and also a board member or some awesome role at the Last Prisoner Project.
Ambassador, brand ambassador, you might just want to unmute yourself there, Evelyn. I'm digging the palm trees, though.
I need to get rid of the palm trees too.
That was awesome.
That was from my last happy hour, my virtual happy hour.
Well, thanks for the invite. Come on. How are you?
I'm good. How are you too?
We're good. We're pushing through another week in 2020, it seems.
Yes. Happy COVID Thursday.
Yeah.
Every week is different in 2020.
I'm super excited to chat with you, Evelyn. I think this is very exciting in the capacities you've come to us, because for me, I have a personal interest in the beverage space. In cannabis, and obviously Virtosa is a huge part of how that space is going to grow moving forward. Also, we have a lot to talk about with the Last Prisoner Project. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think real quick, I would say, let's hear about you. Let's hear about, you know, how you got to where you are. And also, I want to touch on your show as well. So can you tell us a little bit about your journey?
Absolutely. I'll do it as quickly as possible. So my journey in the cannabis industry started with a 87-month sentence from a federal judge for depositing marijuana profits. It was called Marijuana Now. We rebranded it it's called cannabis. And so for depositing the profits of cannabis into my bank account in 2013, received an 87-month sentence for that. Wow. Fast forward, I was released in February 1st of 2019. My reentry process was pretty rough in the beginning, finding employment, and in the process was introduced to Last Prisoner Project, just in the capacity of sharing my story is what I thought that that would be the beginning of the end. I'm just here to share my experience, and it's grown into so much more. Mm-hmm. And in the process of sharing that story, I was introduced to the CEO and the Chief Innovation Officer, Ben and Austin at Virtosa. And they invited me on board as their community engagement manager. My background just in life has been event planning at the hotels, on the hotel level in the hospitality industry. And pre-COVID, the cannabis industry had a lot of events, and so they needed someone to manage that, right? There's literally a conference in this industry every month, and so I was brought on to manage that. And now post-COVID, lots of virtual events, here we are, and now the heart of cannabis. And so much like yourself, wanting to build a platform that normalizes cannabis consumption, or at least have the discussion with many different figures. Soon, Patrick will be on to just discuss how do we normalize cannabis consumption, where it starts, and push the entire industry forward through that conversation.
So what a crazy cool story. And what market was it? What where the sentence was handed down? Where was this? North Carolina.
It is important to add, though, that because part of the injustice was that I was never in North Carolina. I had never been to North Carolina, and my transactions all happened in California.
Unreal.
Unreal.
Got it. Well, at some point in the near future, there will be a statue of you, and I hope it's in North Carolina. So I'm here for you there. So when it comes, let's start with the show, right? Let's start with The Dark Heart, because I think that that's super interesting. And Ellie and I were just joking around with each other, but I think the important conversation that oftentimes we gloss over or don't spend enough time on is how the hell do we educate people? And not just the young people who are either users already or know people who are users, but our parents, our loved ones, our friends, our family, that may be a different generation, maybe a generation that was used to that stigma, the devil's lettuce or whatever the hell they called it, you know? So I'm interested to know, like, the content of the show, what types of folks are you having on? How do you gear the conversation? Is it all people who are for? Do you have people that are adamantly against that you're trying to convince? What does it look like?
Well, I, in just my normal everyday life, do not come across too many people who are adamantly against it.
Isn't that awesome?
If you know anyone, send them my way. But I do think that there is a major gap between generations, that just, you know, the doctors have been able to convince the entire older generation that the opioids are the way to go. And so there's a major gap in even trying to convince my mother that that cannabis is an alternative because of how they grew up thinking that, you know, it's the devil's lettuce. And so for me, I think most of it has to do with education and informing. But I think the way that we consume also needs to change, because smoking it alone already has very negative connotations, right? Just mm-hmm. when you think about your lung health, tobacco use, how are you, and, you know, all of that, the vape, the vape pen is scary. So my personal opinion is we move the consumption. I think edibles and beverages will be the way to go to normalize cannabis consumption. In the first episode of The Heart of Cannabis, I had Jen on from Be Juvie. She's a CBD brand out of Maryland. And she said, my favorite quote from that episode was, her father told her, if cannabis was legal, it would replace the beer that I have on the table right now. And so I think if we are working on replacing the beers and just replacing how we consume, then we can push normalizing cannabis forward.
It's very cool. A touch on wellness in a way, you know, like it's a touch on replacing the obviously destigmatizing the vice that people see cannabis as. Mm-hmm. And that does take the place of, you know, alcoholism in a way, you know, and other things of that nature, obviously opioids. You know, obviously that's probably the bigger one to touch on now. But I think that's an incredible point there. So moving a little bit further into your actions with Virtosa, can you talk a little bit about what Virtosa does, where you guys are in the beverage space?
Absolutely. So what we do scientifically, there's a larger explanation that I am not well versed in. But I will give you the very layman definition of what Virtosa does and what we do for beverage companies moving into the cosmetic industry and also into the edible industry. We take your oil, your distillate oil, and we receive it and we input our emulsions and we use our science and mix it up and do like Bill Nye, the science guy. And so now your oil is a water soluble solution that can be inserted into your already, your recipe, your ready-made recipe for your product. And so now it, you can consume it, right? Because in the beginning of this industry, people would buy their oil, mix it in with their edibles, and you could get one bite that had the entire droplet of oil because oil and water don't mix.
Nope.
You're done. You can't move. And then someone else is eating three cookies and they don't feel a thing. And so Virtosa has made it so now every bite is the same and you're able to dose it out and make oil mix with water. What we've been
doing for kids. That's so helpful. I am the guy who ate all the cookies. So,
right.
So it's just... I mean, life experience has brought me to this point.
Right. I think we saw that.
Listen, we got to do it, right? We got to do it. We'll find that damn drop one way or the other. So, you know, what's interesting to me about a lot of this, you talk about normalization, right? And you talk about replacing certain products that we all use or a vast majority of us use on a daily, weekly basis, right? With cannabis products. I think that that's super interesting. It's definitely something that, you know, you start to see some of these CPG companies circling the industry. You start to hear from the big tobacco, big alcohol and other folks that they want to jump in. You know, I don't know, how does it feel to you having been on one side of the industry, the sort of underutilized, disenfranchised part of this industry that has even been jailed for something so ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And now thinking about being in an industry that every single company in the world wants to be a part of in some way. Big pharma, big CPG.
When I compare it to where I've been and what I've experienced from this country in terms of the legalization versus the criminalization of cannabis, it's really a slap in the face, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I came home, I really had no intention of jumping in. It's really scary. It's still sort of nerve-wracking to know that at any moment the feds could come down and cancel all of this. But being in the industry now, sort of feeling like I am owed this position, this place, this, and you know, and not saying that from like a ego.
No, you are absolutely owed this,
but feeling like I need to own it and make it and grow it and push it because I don't want anyone else to experience what I have experienced, because it is a slap in the face. There's still 40,000 people incarcerated for cannabis in a pandemic where it's been deemed essential in many places across the country. And so I'm enjoying my moment in this space, but not without thinking about those who are still
If you don't mind, let's talk about what we can do better here. I think I just talked to a company yesterday where they have stopped asking applicants if they have a criminal history. Mm-hmm. Things like that, where stories like yours really drive home why that's important. What else can companies, can entrepreneurs, can service providers be doing in this space to really support the efforts of the Last Prisoner Project and to make sure that we are not, that we are working for those 40,000 people that are incarcerated?
Thank you for asking that. That's an important one for me. And so I will say that when I was released, that question was removed from the application. So they can't ask if you're a felon, at least in California, they can't. And so my first experience home, I went straight back into the hospitality industry and I got past the application. I interviewed with four executives, got the job in the same sales and catering field that I had prior. And 2 months in, a coworker Googled my name and I was asked to pack up my bags and leave. And so, which is how I got to LPP. But that was my first experience. And I went into the justice system, first time offender, college degree, a pretty nice resume. So I wasn't expecting to have those reentry issues. And so reentry is a major problem. And so I asked, especially in the cannabis industry, that we just move past that. And we understand that there's a lot of us who've been convicted of felons who just, it doesn't affect our character and it doesn't change our resume and our experience. I also am asking that the cannabis industry, social equity programs are great and awesome. And so many people have had the opportunity to have dispensaries through social equity programs that I applaud. But I ask also that we adjust our hiring practices so that, because I don't want a dispensary. It is not in my heart to have a dispensary. That's another level. So I knew my lane was event planning. Right. And so open the doors within your organizations for people outside of dispensary ownership. And then Last Prisoner Project is always lastprisonerproject.org always has a way for you to help, whether it's a donation, whether it's sharing the story, signing a petition. They have so many lifers right now who are serving life for pot. And the only way for federal lifers to find early release is through clemency, which has to be signed off by the President of the United States of America. And so they have many, many petitions. When you go on their website, lastprisonerproject.org, and you'll be able to sign petitions to assist with the clemency process.
Get busy, Trump. Start signing some documents, pal.
I've got a little faith in the guy. We'll see. I mean, if you're thinking that this is good political, you know, this is a good platform, right? This is a way to win votes.
Could not agree with you more. Could not agree with you more. And I think, Elliot, you were going to mention, I think we are partnering with the Last Prisoner Project, are we not?
Yes, we are, for our next event. And I would imagine moving forward, I hope, just indefinitely. But for the August 18th event that we've mentioned previously, the Last Prisoner Project's Natalie Papillion, did I say that right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She will be speaking on our social equity panel.
Great name.
From Canopy Growth, Presco Labs. So really, I think industry moving insights into, you know, what we should be doing and can be doing and what is being done already, so that, you know, that education I think will be invaluable there. But also Last Prisoner Project is going to receive, I believe, 5% of our ticket revenue from this event, which is something we've not done before as a cannabis event series. And we're very excited to do this. And we have also opened up donations as well through our platform. And we announced this morning and are already seeing donations come in. So we are very excited for this partnership. Something I wish we would have started a while ago, but
it's important work
doing it now, and that's the important thing. So
that's right.
Is there anything you could leave us with, Evelyn? Is there anything that, you know, anything you want to get to our audience right now?
Yes, I would like to say thank you. Thank you for your efforts with Last Prisoner Project. What is important for the audience to know on my side of that is your donations are truly being used I've received scholarships for my daughter's tuition, because when I came home, like, that was a major issue for me. I know during COVID, they've made deposits on their constituents' commissary. And so often we're making donations and we're not knowing where the funds are going. And they are being used. I'm in the process of launching a cannabis accessory line, so I can't touch the flower. And Last Person Project has connected me with so many great people. And so the organization is absolutely using the funds properly and getting the work done. And so I appreciate that. Just, you know, on my own behalf,
I appreciate you. I think, you know, we appreciate the efforts of Last Prisoner Project, and I'm excited to keep moving this industry forward.
Thank you. Me too. We'll do it together.
Everybody, tune in to The Heart of Cannabis. Watch Patrick embarrass himself.
I can't wait. I'll be the old guy.
we there's a fine line in generations here, Evelyn. I'm making sure everybody knows it, but. Thank you so much for being on. Yeah, of course. Absolute pleasure. Be well. And hopefully we'll see you August 18th.
Yes. Absolutely.
Thanks, Evelyn.
All right. See ya.
Take care. Wow. What a story, man.
That's a heck of a show there. That might be, I think, one of the most poignant shows we've done, or I've done. You know, leading from how cannabis is personal to seeing how COVID has affected companies, and you know, look how important it is for us to destigmatize it on a federal level, to us not forgetting those who have already been affected by it being stigmatized.
You hit the nail on the head. Especially with Evelyn's story, and I think most people listening or watching would understand the weight and the importance of a story like that, and how we all hear that and think, we got to do something, you know, and it's not just federal legalization. And I know Illinois seems to be doing a good job at this. Virginia, I know, was looking at it as well. But everybody needs to jump on board. There are people still serving sentences that shouldn't be, especially for nonviolent crimes. It's just absolutely asinine that we're even having this conversation, right? But that's why they exist, the Last Prisoner Project, and we're happy to support them. I, for one, am really, really proud of this show today. You were okay. I mean, I feel like mediocre might be a word that comes to mind, but
getting better. I'll take a step forward next time.
Yeah, if you could, that'd be great.
A team.
Yeah. A and B team over here. Thanks everyone for tuning in. We had a great time with you today. Make sure to check out bzcannabis.com August 18th. Is the next virtual conference. Really, really cool lineup for that. Check out our Benzinga Cannabis Directory, which is now live in its beta launch here. And then also check out Cannabis Partnerships, powered by LinkedIn. It's a new LinkedIn group where we'll be discussing pretty cool topics, sharing news, sharing stories, talking about trends. Feel free to join that group. I'm the current admin, but I'm going to make Elliot do it. So. You'll get to talk to him a lot. Awesome. So there you go.
This was fun. Thanks for having me again. And thanks for tuning in, everybody. Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.
Jeep Freedom Days are here, where right now, well-qualified returning FCA lessees get a low-mileage lease on the 2022 Grand Cherokee WK Laredo E4x4 for $369 a month for 36 months with $3,799 due at signing. Tax, title, license extra. No security deposit required. Call 1-888-925-JEEP for details. Requires dealer contribution, a lease to Chrysler Capital. Lessee is responsible for termination fees. Current lease must end by 7/3/23. Extra charge for miles over 30,000. Residency restrictions apply. Take delivery by 7/5/22. Jeep is a registered trademark.